welcome to a Product Launch Formula 2.1 plus the call number 3. The way we'll do it similar to the way we did last week. I've got a bunch of questions already people have sent in. You can send in more questions via the Instant Teleseminar interface there. You can enter a question, so I'll be taking some questions from there. And then at the end of the call, we'll be opening it up and taking some live questions. Probably won't go quite as long as we did last week. I think last week we were well over 2 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes. My voice, I don't think it's going to last as long this time. So we might not go quite so long. I mean, our target was 75 to 90 minutes. We'll probably be more in that range. Okay, so let's get started. First question, I've gotten this a few times. Will I get all the materials in Product Launch Formula sent to me on DVDs? And related question, how long will the materials be available online? No, you aren't going to get all the materials sent on DVDs. This this online format does allow me to do a lot of really cool things, like make changes in the program as we're going along. And you will see that that's already been happening behind the scenes. People are requesting different stuff. We've been adding stuff to the program. We'll continue to add stuff, you know, and have it created. You know, the bulk of it's all been created already, but new pieces are added all the time. That makes it a little more challenging to send out on DVDs. So, yeah, it is basically just an online course. Now, the materials, my commitment, when we did Product Launch Formula 2.0 last March, my commitment was that I would leave it available for at least 6 months. Here we are it's been 8 months now, and it's still available. And, in fact, the people who bought Product Launch Formula 2.0 are all got a complimentary upgrade to Product Launch Formula 2.1. So that's just sort of the way I do things. I really do take care of my Product Launch Formula owners, and I'll be taking care of you guys. So the stuff will be available for at least 6 months. It might, I might leave it up longer. I'll likely leave it up a lot longer. But that's my commitment right now, 6 months. But I am going to take care of you guys. Another example, Product Launch Formula 1.0 owners who bought even as far back as 2005 got a $1,500 discount on Product Launch Formula 2.0. That's most of them paid either $1,000 or $1,500. So they either got all their money back or 50% more than the money they paid in basically an upgrade credit towards Product Launch Formula 2. So I definitely take care of my owners. Another example, the Product Launch Live Workshop was a $5,000 event, and I did that a couple of Junes ago. And everyone who bought Product Launch Formula, it was a $5,000 event, but everyone who bought Product Launch Formula basically got a 100% credit for the material, for the money they spent on Product Launch Formula that they could apply. So if they bought Product Launch Formula for $1,500, they got a $1,500 discount off of that live workshop. I'm not guaranteeing any of this in the future. I'm just sort of giving an example of I have a soft spot for my Product Launch Formula owners, and I try to take care of you the best I can. So let's move along. Okay. This question, first, I understand about the I think we're a lot alike email, but what do you do for your next launch? You can't keep saying the same thing over and over, can you? Well, there's a couple answers to this. So this is, someone's worried, they're like, okay, I got, you showed me how to do the first launch, how do you do the next launch? Well, first of all, don't worry about that next launch. Just go ahead and do this launch and do your best, the best you can with this launch. Don't worry, you shouldn't let the worry of the next launch paralyze you with this launch. Okay, second of all, yes, you can basically tell the same story over and over. In this case, in your business, there's always going to be two or three or four things that you have to overcome, two or three or four objections that you have to overcome. And those aren't going to change from this launch to the next launch to the next launch. Your product might change, and so your story might change a little bit with your launch. But in general, we all get sick of our marketing long before our prospects get sick of our marketing. Because you're sitting there, you're telling your story every day. You're answering those objections every day. You could do that in your sleep. You know what the answers are. And you get bored with them, okay? But your prospects don't. And the other thing to remember is you've always got new prospects coming into your business. And they don't know the story, and they haven't heard the whole thing. So basically, you can tell your same story. You'll tell it with a little twist. But, you know, even like, I mean, I've written autoresponder sequences that go on forever. And they keep on, you know, there might be 200 messages or 100 messages or 50 messages in a sequence, but it's basically you're just cycling through the same objections over and over again. You're answering them a slightly different way. You're posing them in a slightly different way. You might be giving slightly different content. But you're seeing that basic story that we identified in the last couple modules, you're going to be using that over and over in your marketing. And it will, you know, you might hone it a little bit. You might sharpen the delivery a little bit. You might tweak it a tiny bit. But you're going to be able to use that story over and over and over. Next question. When working with your actual JVs that have relationships with their lists, do you squeeze names off their list, or are they sending out your full sequence of emails, or both? In general, what you're doing is you're creating a squeeze page with some amount of pre-launch content that your partners will mail to, and then you are squeezing their lists. Because, you know, what's going to happen is as you get into the launch, you're going to send a lot of emails. You know, even if initially it's only every 4, 5, 6 days, as you get down to the end of the launch, you're going to be mailing every day. Very, very few partners are going to be willing to do that for you. So what you do is you have them mail to a squeeze page, squeeze them onto your launch list, and then you follow up to them with your pre-launch sequence. Now, I mean, it might be like if you're doing a special thing where you just have one partner, you know, you're doing a special launch just with one partner, maybe you'll get them to send the whole full sequence. But even that's rather unlikely. So you are squeezing the names off their lists, and then you're sending the full sequence of emails yourself. And you have to remember, this is one thing when you're writing your copy is, say, like, you know, you've got a 3-week launch. Well, some people are going to join your list right at the beginning. But some of them aren't going to join until you're 2 weeks into your pre-launch. Or maybe they'll even join the day before you go live. So as you're going along, you know, you have to be tweaking, like, your welcome message. So when people subscribe to your list, the first email they're going to get is, like, a welcome message. And that welcome message has to bring them up to speed with the launch. This is one of the great things about a blog. Because, you know, if you have a blog and you're using the blog to communicate as you go through your pre-launch, now when people join your list late in the launch, you can basically write them copy that sends them to the blog that says, you know, so they can basically catch up on the whole entire launch story. Okay, a question from Carrie in Pagosa Springs. The sellout marketing style is great for internet marketing products, but what about a community area? She gave her site is virtualearthvillage.com. I've been trying to figure out how to create something that can sell out and keep people coming back for more. Can you address this? Yeah, I mean, if you look at the tax sale that I showed you, you know, that was my super quick sort of cheesy sale, but that's exactly what that was. That was for an ongoing community, an ongoing subscription product, and basically I offered a discount. Now, in general, you don't want to be offering a discount for your products because what have you done? If you continually discount your products, you've essentially just lowered your price, right? I mean, I remember the first time I went furniture shopping and I got, you know, got to this big furniture store and I was pretty excited that they had a sale going on. But, you know, this is the first time I bought furniture, so I was, you know, I wasn't about to buy a whole bunch of furniture on my first visit. It was a big decision. So I ended up coming back a week later, and I noticed they had a sale. It was a different sale. You know, they called it something different, but it was another sale, and all the prices were pretty much the same as that other time. And because I'm big decisions like that, I tend to be pretty slow. So I didn't buy that time. I came back another week later, and this time they had another sale going on. And at that point, I said, it looks like these guys always have a sale. So these markdowns aren't markdowns. Those are their normal prices. So it lost all urgency for me to buy. So it's the same thing like with your stuff. If you continually put stuff on sale, then you know you've done nothing but lower your prices. But with that tax sale, I had a good reason why, and I would only do that maybe like once or twice a year. I would have that type of a sale. So there really was urgency involved there. And I mean, it wouldn't be a tax sale every time. It'd be some different reason for the sale each time. Another thing you can do is you can add bonuses. You can put together a special bonus package. Like, you know, it's year end, right? We're coming up on year end, and it makes sense that, you know, if you let people know we're having a year end special, we're getting ready to close out the books, and we'd love to bring in some more members this month. So we're going to put together a special. And if you join this month, you get this, this, and this, and this. You give them a whole bunch of basically create a bonus package. So that's basically what you could do is you would periodically, a couple times a year, do a launch, which is basically a sale where you're offering either a discount, you're offering you could give them 14 months for the price of 12, or you can put together some bonus package of like special reports or something. And this is very, very effective. Okay, next question. Will you be covering how to manage a virtual assistant? No, I'm not going to do that. Again, I can't cover every aspect of business in this course, and I'd say that one's pretty far outside the realm of what we're doing. I will, in one of the later modules, I'll have a video on putting together and managing a launch team, like who are the key players. If it's easy to do a launch and, you know, a smaller launch, say like up to $100,000 all by yourself. And, I've actually managed a launch of over $500,000 completely by myself with no help. But once you get much over that $100,000 launch range, you're probably going to need something of a team. And it might just be one person. It might be two or three people. But within different roles. And I'm going to be covering that as we come up and talking about some of the tools we use when we're working virtually, because the teams I've built it's never been we're in the same office. We've always been spread out. Like with Product Launch Formula 2, my team was, we were probably up to six people or so, and, I mean, they were at all corners of the globe, thousands of miles apart, and it's definitely possible and even convenient to do that. And so I'll be showing you some of the tools I use for that. But, you know, in terms of specifically how do you manage a virtual assistant, I'm not going to be covering that. Okay, now this is a really long question, and I wish we had the PowerPoint for this one, because then you could read the whole thing instead of me reading it to you. But basically, this is someone, they have a community. The community costs this is actually a community for of network marketing, multi-level marketing, where they charge between $250 and $450 a month. They're also getting ready to launch a standalone coaching program, which is priced at $2,000. And the question, and that's going to be sort of this end-to-end training program. The question is this person wants to basically give everyone in their, you know, their $250 to $450 a month community, give them full access to the $2,000 product, and they're trying to figure out how this works. Like, because they're planning on selling the product standalone for $2,000, but also giving it to the people for $450. And basically, there's a lot of questions here, and I wish you could read the PowerPoint. But basically, they're having a hard time trying to figure out how these two work together. And this person, I don't have their name, is making this a lot more complicated than I think it needs to be. I guess the question is really like, if you have a $450 a month program, would people just join that program and get the full out $2,000 program with, you know, 1 month payment, and then, you know, basically quit the membership site and have gotten your $2,000 product for $450. So there's a lot of different ways you can go here. The thing, what I would do is, yeah, I mean, it's wonderful to give a high dollar course to your members for free, because, you know, they're paying you a lot of money at $450 a month. And it sounds like these people stick around for a while. So I would continue to give that to them, or no, I would go ahead, give them, you know, the full out program. I'd make sure they understood that it's a $2,000 benefit that they're getting it. I would probably set up the delivery so they got the delivery over a couple months or even 3 months time frame, and you know, at least then they have to stick around for several months to get it, to get the entire course. I would also make the 1997 product, I would put on a continuity deal, so when people bought that, they were automatically enrolled in your community for the, you know, the $250 to $450. I mean, that'd be the way to build that community. But you don't have to do that. And there is some concern there if you did that and you dump, then, you know, after they got the $2,000 product, you dumped them into the continuity, then they would realize they could have gotten it just by joining the community. So you could, I mean, what you could do is you could say everyone who's up until the date that you launch that the $2,000 product, that people that bought before that were charter members and they get the 1997 product for free. People that purchase after or that join the community after don't get that program for free. Lots of different ways to go here, but it's just, don't overthink this. Just make a decision, and you know, you can always change your offer going forward. You know, just don't go into this. Don't ever make promises like, you know, you'll get this forever for free, or you'll get this at this price forever for, you know, that's a problem I see a lot of people make with communities is, you know, they sell a lifetime membership. That is a problem, in my opinion. Or they say, you know, you've joined this program, you get a charter membership, your price will never, ever go up. Generally, when you do that, you'll live to regret it. I know I have. And so I would, you know, instead of that, I say charter memberships, we guarantee we're going to lock in your price for at least a year or at least 2 years or at least 3 years, something along that lines. So I probably spent too much time on this, made my answer too complicated. The reality is when you're trying to figure out these offers, you're not necessarily going to get it all perfect up front. In fact, nothing with your launch is going to be perfect up front. So just go ahead and do something and tweak it later. As long as you don't make commitments to people that, you know, that you can't change, you're fine. You can always change stuff down the road. Okay, next question. I'm doing a seed launch and considering mailing postcards to send folks to a squeeze page. Okay, we talked about that on last week's call. I got to thinking that it wouldn't cost that much more to email them an audio CD, and I think that would have a much greater chance of delivering my entire message by lowering the chance of being discarded by the secretary. But the nature of the medium is that it's harder to skim and throw away. The immediate call to action is a fairly low threshold. Put it in your CD player. But I'm not sure what I want to say in the audio CD without giving away too much. And I don't know what to promise them if they'll go to the squeeze page. The niche here is divorce lawyers and the product's membership site. So you got to turn around a little bit. If you just send people a audio CD cold, actually, I would argue that the call to action does not have a low threshold. It has a very high threshold. Someone's sitting there staring at a CD, they have to, you know, go over and put it, you know, in their car or in their stereo. And by the way, these days people are listening to iPods; they're not listening to CDs. So what you're asking them to take this thing and put it in and invest time in it. When they don't know who you are, that's a huge threshold. I don't think people are going to do that for you. You send them a postcard, and then the postcard promises them the CD if they go and opt in. See, if a CD just shows up unasked for, it has no value. It has zero perceived value. But if you promise them this training CD, if you send them a postcard that asks them to go opt in, they opt in, and as part of opting in, they get the CD. Now you're talking. I still don't think that's as powerful as, you know, just putting out the audio message, you know, right in, you know, that they get the audio message or better, a video right away after they opt in rather than waiting for the CD. But, you know, a CD could be a good carrot to offer to get the opt-in. But see, you're all twisted around here. You're giving away. You want to give away too much up front. You're not sure what to say because you're going to be giving away too much. And this means you're going to have to promise, you're going to have to come up with something much bigger to promise them to go to the squeeze page. I mean, after you give them the CD, what else are you going to give them? So, yeah, send them just a postcard, drive them to your site, offer them either, you can do an audio CD or a downloadable audio or a video, a downloadable video. That's the way you want to go. Okay, next question. I wonder if I'm doing too much preparation. I prepared a pre-launch content, but now I'm thinking it's not good enough. It's not good enough. So I'm getting a bit convoluted on how much I'm offering to get that email address from the prospective customer. But really, as I'm learning from you, can you ever really offer too much free stuff? Well, you know, I talked about this on last week's call. Yes, you could offer too much free stuff. If you just overwhelm them with so much stuff that they can't even get through your free stuff, then they're not going to buy from you. They're going to think, okay, I'll buy from him after I get through his free stuff. And then they never end up getting through the free stuff. So you can give away too much. I mean, I would definitely go for quality over quantity. Generally, you know, this idea of it's not good enough, you know, you're not the only person going through that. The reality is it probably is good enough, especially if you're an expert in whatever area you're in, whatever niche you're in. We're always our own worst critics, so it probably is good enough. You don't have to give a ton away to get the opt-in. You know, it could be a 2-3-4 minute video to get the opt-in, or it could be the promise of a short video to get the opt-in. Doesn't take too much, or the promise of a PDF report. It doesn't, you know, take all that much, but it does have to be compelling. You have to figure out what is their pain and then go after that. What's their number one problem and go after that. Offer a solution to that in your pre-launch content. Okay, next question. When squeezing names off of another list hosted elsewhere, do you use your launch story stuff along with the free content you're giving away in order to squeeze the names? Or are you just selling the free goodies and hitting them with launch stuff on the other side? Well, I mean, you're basically doing, you know, your squeeze page can't do too much. But it needs to, it sets up the launch. Okay, you have limited real estate. I mean, if you even go look at productlaunchformula.com, you know, I don't have a heck of a lot of text there. You know, I figure out what I think is the most punchy, the strongest point, and then I hammer home on that with the promise of more stuff. The whole launch story, it's this overarching story. You're going to use it in every aspect of your launch. But on a squeeze page, you don't have time to tell your entire story. So you go after sort of their biggest pain, their biggest hot point, and promise to solve that. Or show them how other people have solved that. And then once they get on your list, then you start to go through your whole entire story. Okay, next question. Can you share any wisdom about publishing under a pen name? We're sketching out products in multiple non-related niches and are concerned that it could be confusing to customers if everything is under one author's name. And we don't want the competition to be able to find all our businesses. You know, I haven't used a pen name, but I know plenty of people that have. And it's perfectly legal. You know, the one thing is like, if this is some, you know, one thing I would think about is like, are you going to want to go out and speak in public and build a real serious brand around it? If so, you can do that with a pen name, but it probably is a little more complicated. So I would probably, if you're going to do multiple niches, I would try to figure out which one is most likely where you're going to really create this public persona, where you're really going to go out in public, and you know, and maybe none of them are, you know. But in that case, that's the one I would go with, the real name. And then using pen names is especially in this case where you don't want the competition to be able to track all your businesses down, or where they're close enough niches where people might wonder, you know, like, you know, is this person, you know, really an expert in this, because they're also selling in these other places. And so in those cases, it's good I mean, it can be a good strategy to have a pen name. Okay, next question. Can you please elaborate on the pros and cons of accepting new members to a membership site only at certain times instead of all the time? Part of our target market is teachers, so we're thinking about opening the site enrollment at the beginning of fall and spring semesters. This is sort of a tough one. It's the pros of having it only available at certain times is it makes it easier to sell. You know, you can sell. It's just a lot easier when you have a solid date where you close down. You know, where we're just going to be open for this week in September, and then we're going to be open for a week in March, and that's it. You got to get in now. So, I mean, it gives real scarcity, real urgency, and it makes it a lot easier to sell. The negatives are you're going to have attrition. People are going to leave your site, and so you're going to spike up and have peak volume when you launch, and then it's going to trail off until you reopen. And I'll just, speak from experience that it could be some of it a downer if you have a continuity service that does that has declining monthly revenue. It's just psychologically, even if you make more dollars, that can be something of a pain. So you have to ask yourself if you can deal with that. I mean, it's an individual question. Some people can, some people can't. You know, if you can be big picture and look at the overall numbers, then you very well might do better by only opening it a few times a year. I know plenty of people that do it either way. There is no right or wrong answer. Going through a launch cycle as opposed to continually accepting. The other thing is someone could join your list, become a prospect, a week after your launch, and have to wait for 6 months, and by then they might not be interested anymore. So there, you'll lose some interim sales, you'll lose some people, period. But it makes the selling of it a lot easier when you do open up. And also, with this target market, I think it makes a lot of sense. You can build a story around it, why we're only open those a couple times a year. Next question. If you're building a list from scratch, what time frames would be okay to go from initial client contact to launch? In other words, how long do you need to build a relationship before you go to launch mode? This is sort of like saying, how long do you have to be? Should you be dating before you get married? Some people it's like a week, some people it's 10 years. Most people are not going to be at those extremes; they're going to be somewhere in between. But there, it's different for every couple, and it's the same way here. It's different for every market, every niche, every list. In general, I think you can build a pretty darn good relationship in, 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's not like you have to give people 6 months. I'd say 2 or 3 weeks is almost like a golden spot. So don't obsess with doing this for a really long time. Okay, next question. How big of a concern is it for me to stay with one shopping cart? I've not used ProFollow, but since that's your preference, I thought I'd ask if there's bad news with doing a launch using one shopping cart. No, there isn't. I've done plenty of launches using one shopping cart, and you can use one shopping cart with profollow.com. You absolutely can do that. The problem I have mostly with one shopping cart is, in my experience, and this isn't recent experience, I haven't had experience for probably 12 to 18 months now using One Shopping Cart's email servers, but my experience was their deliverability was not as good as AWeber or ProFollow.com. That was one issue. The second issue was it could take a long time to get your email out. So if you have a larger list, say anything over like 10,000 people, it might take hours and hours, and literally I had one time where we were coming down to the end of a launch. We sent out, we queued up our 24 hours to go email, and it didn't go out for 24 hours. I mean, we were going to end the launch, say, like Thursday at midnight. Wednesday night we queued up that email. It was supposed to go out, say, 24 hours to go. Well, it didn't go out until after Thursday at midnight when we were shutting down the cart. So that's obviously a problem. The third one, which is related to stuff not going out right away, is you really can't schedule stuff. And you can't schedule stuff, and you can't just say, okay, send now and have it go immediately. Like with ProFollow.com, you hit send, and it basically goes within minutes. one shopping cart, you know, you hit go, and it just it queues up. It takes a long time to go. And then after it does go, it takes a long time to go through your entire list. So bottom line is, you know, the times I've done launches with one shopping cart, the shopping cart functions worked fine. The affiliate functions worked fine. Their email function just has not been as reliable and as strong as with Profollow or AWeber. But, you know, you don't have to drop them. You can use them for your shopping cart. Okay, do you know someone who can build me a survey before my website goes online? Yeah, you can just go to SurveyMonkey. That's who I use for my surveys. It's completely hosted on their servers, so you don't need a website at all. Just go to SurveyMonkey.com. They have a free version, which is actually pretty darn usable. And after you start to get, you know, more response, bigger responses to your surveys, then you're probably going to want to get the paid version, which I think is like about $20 a month. But I've been using those guys for 5 or 6 years now. Super, super easy to use. Okay, next question. I currently have a membership site, Learn to Ballroom Dance Online, which I never actually launched. I will be changing the name to Love to Dance Online the first of the year. Do I include my current free Tip of the Week list in the launch for the new and improved site? Or just start a new list? Yeah, you should absolutely use your current list. You should probably start a new list as well, a new launch list. But, you know, you can still, you know, mail everything to your current list or tell them about the launch and that something's coming for this new improved site and encourage them to go and get on your new list. But you should absolutely, you know, market to that, to the old list. Okay, now, so this is, it seems like every week I get lots of questions on email and I go off on a big rant on email and who you should use. And, but this is important stuff. So I'm going to go over this one more time. So this person wrote, just to answer what seems to be a common question with everyone, iContact.com will allow you to import a list from another email service or an Excel sheet without doing double opt-in if you guarantee that those people sign up to receive email from you. Okay. I've never used iContact.com. I've used lots of services. I haven't used them. I do know there are services in existence that will allow you to bring a list over and, you know, and let you mail that list. This is the way email works, is it's all reputation. You have to have an excellent reputation if you want your email to get delivered. And when I say reputation, I don't mean your personal reputation. I mean your list reputation. The IP address that your list goes out under will develop a reputation. It will start with none, and when it doesn't have a reputation, it will be suspect, and then you'll gather a reputation as you go forward. And that reputation is based on lots of different things, like spam complaints, like open rates. You know, having a higher open rate gives you a better reputation. And these reputations are with companies like, you know, Yahoo and Gmail and MSN. And that's where, and not only that, but like all the various ISPs. And then there's these blacklists, like Brightmail is one of them. And I'm forgetting, you know, there's these real-time blacklists. And all those people, all those companies are tracking all your lists. They're tracking all the lists. And if you just have a list with a couple hundred people, you're not going to even hit the radar. But once you get a bigger list, they're going to be watching your IP and tracking you. Now, this may all sound like Big Brother and crazy, but believe me, it's reality. So if as soon as your reputation, you know, you start to have more spam complaints, your reputation falters, then you're going to start having delivery problems and your email is going to start getting sent, you know, not delivered, sent into spam filters, sent into bulk mail folders instead of people's inbox. So if you want to win at this game, you have to maintain a very, very clean reputation. You also, and this is why, you know, people kept asking whether they could host their lists on their servers. And this is why you can't, because you need someone out there fighting the good fight for you and making sure that your reputation stays clean. And if something goes wrong, this is a person who's got all the phone numbers from all those blacklist people and all those email services, and they can call up and say, hey, you know, this is a clean list. It's double opt-in. I've got, I've got all this proof here. I've got all this IP addresses here of everyone who's double opt-in, yada, yada, yada. So you need someone on your side, someone that you pay at your email provider to fight that. Now, email deliverability rates for different providers can rise and fall. My experience with Profollow and AWeber since 2003 has been they've been incredibly consistent and rock solid. Now I'm not saying this about, I mean, I can't say for sure about iContact, but this is what. But if you have companies that allow you to import lists, your list might be perfectly clean, right? Okay, you could have the most sterling clean list, and they let you import it. Now you're in business, and everything's beautiful and joyful and great, right? Now, what about, 2 months from now, some other guy with some not so sterling, not so lily white list, or maybe an outright spammer goes to iContact and says, hey, I've got this list of, 50,000 people, and I swear to God that they all opted in for my list. Can I import them? And we're just using iContact for an example, but we could use anyone that allows you to import a list. Let's make up a name. Because I don't want to badmouth iContact, because I don't have any direct experience with them. Let's make up a name of, fastemail.com. Okay, so say there's this new company, fastemail.com, that allows you to import lists. You import your list. Your list is lily white. The people love you. They open all your email. Great. Good. Now you can start emailing them. Life is great. You're getting fantastic open rates. You're getting great delivery rates. Life is perfect, okay? Every time you send out an email, they open it up. They end up buying your stuff. Now, say 3 months from now, Joe Blow over in Peoria just happened to scrape a bunch of email addresses off some forum. It's a pure spam list. He goes to fastemail.com and says, hey, I've got this list, can I import it? And they say, well, are they opt-ins? And he lies through his teeth and says, yeah, they're opt-in, it's totally clean. They're like, okay, here, bring them in. So, Joe Blow over in Peoria now has his list hosted on the same server you're on, maybe even the same IP, but certainly the same IP block as you're on. He starts sending out his spam email, okay, because Fast Email let him import the list. Now, what happens is he gets blacklisted. But they don't just blacklist him. They blacklist you because of your IP address is either in the same block as his or might even be the exact same IP address. So what I'm saying is there are some – AWeber and Profollow, at times, they can be frustrating to deal with because they are hard-nosed about where your leads come from. They are just – completely hardcore about this, about importing lists. I'm friends with Tom Colzer, the president, the CEO, the owner of AWeber. Does he let me import lists? He knows I've been lily white clean for 12 years. He's not going to let me import a list. He's definitely not going to let you import a list. They're going to be harder to deal with in terms of importing stuff like that. I mean, you can import people, but then they have to opt in, or they have to, not opt in, but they have to confirm when you import them. So they're a lot harder to deal with up front, but that means that a year from now, 2 years from now, Joe Blow out in Peoria isn't going to import a bad list and give them a bad name, and because of giving them a bad name, cause you delivery issues. So in my opinion, there are email hosts that will let you import stuff, and there are email hosts that will let you do things that are a little closer to the gray area. Those services might have great delivery right now, but my prediction is that they will not have great delivery down the road, and then you're going to have to be bouncing your list from host to host to host, always looking for, trying to stay at one step ahead of the spammers. So I've said this before. I've gone on and on here now. I've said this before. Your list host is your single most important decision you're going to make in your business. I've used probably a half a dozen, probably more than a half a dozen different list hosts over the years. The one that I'm happy with and I stick with is Profollow.com or AWeber. You know, Profollow is my private label. If you go there, I make a few bucks. If you go to AWeber, I don't make anything. But in my opinion, that's the way to go. You know, your mileage may vary. Other people, other smart people certainly disagree with me. But I do happen to be buddies with some of the top email delivery experts in the world. So what I'm telling you isn't just stuff I've made up. This is stuff either I've known through experience, I've seen through experience in launches I've been involved in, or else I've been told by the premier delivery experts in the world. Okay, so I just pounded email into the ground yet again. Let's move along. One more question here before I go to the questions that were typed in. These questions I've been going through are all from our survey. Okay, here it is. Do you sell any affiliate products or just your own? I'm in the early stages of creating cash flow. I feel I have so much to do to develop my own stuff and don't want to get off track, but could use cash just to help get my own stuff going. Any thoughts? There's two ways to make money online. You can either sell your stuff or you can sell other people's stuff. And I think it's wise to do both pretty much all the time. I think 90% of my revenue and 80% of my profits come through selling my own stuff. But I really like having that other 20% of profits coming from selling other people's stuff. You know, as long as it's good stuff that you can stand behind, it does even out your cash flow in a big way. And often, you know, even if you get up, you're cranking and rolling, you're not going to have enough product to satisfy the demand of your readers. So you find other good products and tell them about it. So I'm definitely in favor of selling other people's stuff, which is basically what an affiliate program is. Just pick the right product and pick carefully. Definitely go for it. Okay, I'm going to get a drink of water here, and then I'm going to go to some of the questions that have been typed in so far in this instant teleseminar. How important is it? Here's a question from Dan in Mount Shasta. How important is it to have a responsive web host? Currently, I have SEO established with my current host IP and first page rankings, but the company can take days to respond. I'd have a hard time. I don't know. I would have a difficult time being with any host that took days to respond. Because if something goes wrong, you're in real trouble. Now, since this is a tough one because you've got first page rankings, you've got your IP all set up. I might look at putting a different site somewhere else and leaving. You know, if you've got, depending if this is a real flagship site, then you might want to just bite the bullet and move. If it's not a flagship site and it's not a fantastic domain name, then you can just go and create another site and another domain name and then send traffic over from the current one. Leave that one in place so you're still getting the benefits of your SEO. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, especially if you're going to go through a launch, you need to have them be somewhat responsive, at least via email. Like I know I've recommended FutureQuest.net. And they don't do phone support, but their email support usually takes, it's the longest it will ever take to get a response is 15 minutes, and it's often 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, it really is a lot of peace of mind to have a web host that you can get a response from. I mean, and the way it works is that, 99.9% of the time you're never going to need support from your web host, but when you need it, you really need it. Okay. Question from Helen Plano, Texas. Question about how much to put on a squeeze page. I like productlaunchformula.com with the video, which is 16 minutes. But note that 6and7.com has no video but a fairly long letter. I've also seen squeeze pages that are quite brief, and you have to opt in before you get anything. What are your thoughts on what to put on the squeeze page? So first of all, 6and7.com was created in 2003, and I've never touched it since then. So it's pretty old, so it's not something good. And also, when I did it, it was completely different. No one else was doing a long-form sales letter to get an opt-in to a free easing. So, you know, I did that because it was different, because I wanted to get people's attention, but it's been a long time. Product launch formula, that model's working really well. I did use a 16-minute video. It's tough to it can be – you might want to go shorter. I mean, I've got a lot of experience at this, and I put a lot of time into that video. That page converted really, really well, especially the targeted JV traffic. I would probably – you know, if it's the first time you're putting something like this together, I'd probably more aim for the 2 to 4, 2 to 5 minutes. Because it's easier to stay interesting and punchy and compelling in that type of thing. So, I mean, to me, using a 16-minute video is more like an expert level or mastery level type of thing. I would tend to go a little shorter because it's easier to not be boring with a shorter video. But that video is working really, really well. You could just do a text squeeze page. They can work as well. But, you know, I would test that. I would test the video versus just pure text. John in Carlsbad, I already have an AWeber account. Do I still need ProFollow or do I just change to ProFollow? If you got an AWeber account, you don't have to change. You're all set up. If you did want to change to ProFollow, you know what? The carrot I'm offering if you join ProFollow is after this course is over, I'm going to, you know, it's not going to be until January or February when we wrap this thing up. I'm going to be creating a bunch of or some video tutorials for doing some of the things on AWeber and ProFollow that I've figured out. People on ProFollow will get that. You can, if you have an AWeber account, if you wanted to, you can switch to ProFollow. You can send a support, an email to AWeber support and ask them to switch over, and they'll take care of that for you. Okay, next question. Another one from John in Carlsbad. What type of attrition do most of these programs experience? Yours, Frank Kearns, Stompernet, et cetera. I can't answer that. I mean, actually, you know, there's just no way I can give away, you know, the details of Frank's business or Stomper's business. And I don't really want to give away mine either. You know, I'll tell you this though. If, all of these programs, have much lower attrition rates than your normal, because your normal, when you're selling continuity, you really need to, until you gather data, you know, the number to think about is getting 3 to 4 months out of a new subscriber. You know, what will happen is some subscribers, a lot of them will stay on forever, but a bunch of them will drop off in you know, the first month. So in general, with continuity, the numbers I've heard over and over is you plan on 3.5, 4 months for a member. And then, you know, and that's what you plan until you get real data. You know, now different programs vary dramatically. You know, there's programs that are 8 months, that are 12 months on average. But, you know, when you're just starting out, you probably want to aim at 3.5 to 4 weeks or 4 months in your planning. Let's see. Next question from Veronica. I'm not sure if you've covered this on a previous call, but what do you think about discounting products due to the economy? In general, I hate discounting things, and I avoid it. You know, you could, if you were to do something like that, I would do, you know, make it a one-time sale. You know, you do it for a week that we're going to, you know, we know times are tough, and we're going to do our bit to get, you know, to help you out and to get things moving. And so just this one time only, we're going to offer, you know, a discount for the next week. And so basically it's the tax sale. But your story is that it's based around the economy. But if you – discounting is just – there's so many bad things about discounting, and there's nothing good except for maybe some quick cash flow. And but it's bad positioning, and it's just – you don't want to be competing on prices. So, yeah, that's how I feel. A note from Pat Mattson in Running Springs. Pat says – I am a virtual assistant. They can call me at, okay, if you really want, here's Pat's number. It's 909-867-2413. Pat's a virtual assistant. Sounds like she's got some time available. 909-867-2413. Okay, let's see. We're at 55 minutes. I'll go through a few more of these. From Durante in Atlanta, are there any slides being presented? No, we're having difficulties with the putting slides up today. It just wouldn't load for us, so we're having to go completely audio here. From Ryan in Rotterdam, I live in Holland and would like to focus on the European market first. What free service can I use to start with, teleseminars or webinars? I don't know any free services for webinars. There's a few for teleseminars. I mean, I would just Google, you know, free teleseminar service or free bridge line. I know there's like freeconference.com that's available in the States. I don't know if it's available in Europe. I don't know what's available in Europe. But, you know, Google's the best place to find something like that. Jeff, what's your view of doing the pre-launch over the Christmas period? What I'd like to get it to is to give them some great content, showing them how to really achieve their goals really early in January, so that when they so by then they have to be warmed up to us, meaning content over Christmas period. Any thoughts? Yeah, it works. I've done that before. You know, it's a good time to be giving stuff. I mean, it's a giving season, so if you're going to give good content, it's a good giving season. You know, I would avoid mailing on Christmas Day. I'd avoid mailing on New Year's Eve. Yeah, giving pre-launch content over Christmas is good. From Shelley in Kirkland, I don't understand this one. She says, this is my first telecast real time. Are you taking notes or do I need to? I'm definitely not taking notes. I'm talking full time. There's no way I can talk like this and take notes. You know, you can basically you can get the recording after the fact. So you know, you can listen to it again and again. You can take notes off the recording. You can take notes real time. Whatever works best for you. I know personally for me, learning, I like to listen the first time, and then go back and listen again to the recording and take notes from the recording. That's just what works for me, and that's worked for me for a long time. But, you know, everyone's got different learning styles.